Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And for today, we do get into a discussion around the world of blockchain, but more specifically, the world of NFTs. People will remember that through the pandemic, particularly in late 2020 and 2021, we heard about NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens. Everyone and their mother was getting in on NFTs, and I think everyone knows the picture of the Bored Ape by now. You know, that has been making a lot of rounds. People have been making a lot of deals. People have been selling a lot of art because that's one of the big applications that NFTs have found themselves serving. But for today, we do get into a discussion with Moment. They are a South African startup, and one of the things that's interesting is how they describe themselves, because they describe themselves as a social NFT marketplace. So we're going to be having, you know, quite an interesting discussion for today. We're going to be talking to Adam Romain, who is the co-founder at Moment, and one of the big things I'm quite curious to understand is where he sees things. Because when you're talking to certain people, you sort of get the sense that NFTs have fallen off. I'd think that's what the young people would say, that they've fallen off. It's no longer trendy and all of that, that the bubble has burst. But we're going to be understanding from Adam, you know, whether or not the bubble has indeed burst, or whether, you know, it simply means that the real market players have been left in the ring, and that, you know, those that were just there for the hype have sort of fallen off. So Adam, greetings. How are you today?
Sweet. Thanks so much for me. I'm doing great. Yeah. How are you doing? Are you feeling good?
No. Alive, good, well, and thriving on this end. And it's always great to sort of, talk to someone who is intimately involved in the space. Now, as we begin, right. I think before we get into the meat and potatoes of the discussion, I've just described you guys as a social NFT marketplace. What does that actually mean? What does Moment do?
Cool. So Moment is the easiest to use platform for Web3. So we're trying to simplify the whole Web3 process. You know, it can be very, very complicated. And where we've landed up in the product we've built right now to help people get into Web3, NFTs, crypto, is a social media NFT marketplace. So Web3 and NFTs is generally like the financial internet. So, you know, a lot of the times when you're buying NFTs or using them, not all the times, they're generally to buy some form of like asset that can even give you a financial return. So, you know, we just want a place where people can, you know, start their journey, create some NFTs for whatever use case they want to, you know, create them, allow people to buy it super easily and share that with their friends, you know, just kind of like all learn together, collaborate. And, you know, it's kind of like an alternative investment platform, right? That's what most NFT platforms are, you know, if you boil them down to what they actually do. So that's what we are.
One of the big things that you've already mentioned, I think just listening to you over the last minute or so, you mentioned Web3 at least three times, right? So let's drill down into what that actually means. I think you had already, started explaining on a high level what that is, because at least from some of our understanding, you know, where the first iteration of the web, you literally had, you know, companies and organizations that were online sort of speaking to people. They were sort of like billboards as opposed to anything else. Then you have Web 2.0, where it's sort of two-way traffic. You've got people, the people that are, you've got the businesses, but also at the same time, you've got people, you know, creating their user-generated content and all of that stuff. That's my understanding of, the second, you know, wave, the Web 2.0. When we talk about 3.0, what are we talking about specifically? What's the next evolution that we're referring to?
I think it's more of a collaborative internet, right? So generally, you want websites that can talk to each other, flow, you know, people can move their data wherever they want. So it's more of a free, you own your data, money flows more easily. There's less monopolies, not saying that there won't be massive companies that kind of own certain segments in the new Web3 type of internet. But I think it's just more collaboration and more decentralization. So people can create a service that the whole world can use. It's open source, you know, and, you know, people can collaborate on these amazing new products that open up new opportunities. Whereas in the past, I think it was more about Web2, you know, these companies realize the power of the, you know, web technologies to make their own financial gains and just grow their companies massive. I think in Web3, you're seeing financial inclusion happening through DeFi and other products, and that a lot of those the technology is built by communities, which is insane. So it's just like, I feel, you know, if you to boil it down, it's the financial internet. So it's allowing people to transact with each other without having to go through middlemen and banks and things like that, and more collaboration. So websites are, you can interact with websites, different websites more easily and move your data around more freely. You know, with Facebook, how do you move all your Facebook posts to another social media platform? You just can't do that. Whereas in Web3, you'd be able to be on a social media site, having all your posts and all kind of the things you want to share with the world, and you can immediately shift it over to another platform, you know, with a click of a button. You know, that's you just can't do that in Web2. So it's just more free, more collaboration, more financial inclusion. So yeah, it's awesome.
Awesome indeed. And when you think about something like that, one of the big things, because we are a business platform, is we would be curious to maybe understand, how is it that you guys are making money, right? We've gone into the discussion around, you know, Web3 and, you know, all the, you know, the fact that you see it as a way for more financial inclusion, etc. But for a moment, right, getting onto Web 3.0, how are you guys making money from it?
Cool. So, you know, the process of minting and creating NFTs and buying crypto and all these, you know, kind of assets and things that you need to interact with Web3, that whole process is generally quite complicated. So, for example, let's just take one. So minting NFTs, minting means creating NFTs. We have a free tier that we allow anyone to create NFTs for free. But when businesses come to us with larger projects, so for example, someone wants to, you know, start a solar farm and they want to, you know, crowdfund that through NFTs and pay out token holders every quarter, we will help them create all the smart contracts and NFTs necessary, and we charge for that. So we charge an upfront fee to launch massive NFT projects. And then those projects generally land on our marketplace, and that's where people can buy those NFTs. And when you buy an NFT, same as Visa and MasterCard, they take transactions whenever, you know, something happens. We're also going to take transactions when people buy NFTs, but we're not greedy. So the transaction fees are a lot less than, you know, traditional finance. So yeah, we kind of are between transactions and helping businesses and individuals get into the ecosystem, whether that be buying crypto, creating NFTs, or launching massive projects.
And, you know, for something like that, it's very interesting that you point to, you know, the smart contracts, because I think when it comes to blockchain, you know, if it's take a step back before we even get to the NFTs, people that were advocates of blockchain back in the day always said that this was going to be one of the big applications that people have. So I'm very interested then, because of what you've just said, you know, around your business model, about how people are actually making use of NFTs on the ground, right? Like I said at the beginning, we sort of heard as if we sort of hear that NFTs have fallen off, that the bubble has burst, and that people are, you know, trying to run away from the market as much as possible. But, you know, the smile on your face, you know, suggests to me that no, there's a lot going on under the surface. So maybe talk to us about that, right? I mean, I'm actually even liking that example that you gave to us about someone crowdfunding for a solar farm or something like that using NFTs. What are some of the practical applications, like I said, that you guys are actually seeing people making use of these things, and have they fallen off?
Cool. So let's start with have they fallen off? That the answer is no. Matter of fact, they're growing like crazy. So, you know, the NFT market, whether, you know, the bubble that's popped is the bubble talking about paying ridiculous amounts for junk NFTs. You know, that doesn't happen anymore, for good reasons. I'm so happy that kind of bubble popped, where these projects that just had no utility, no meaning behind them, were selling for high prices. It made sense in the beginning because, you know, there was low, the scarcity was there. So there wasn't many very NFT projects out there. People were buying in the early ones as almost like an investment, saying they're buying history. But now, you know, that's dead. So what's coming up now is more, are projects that actually have meaning, that are normally asset backed or, have very strong utility behind them. So let's actually dive into a couple of the ones that we've launched. We're launching a project with Scoin. Scoin, you know, has, they deal a lot with gold and, providing coin sets and coin collectibles for people to buy and sell. And now one of the problems with coin sets is, you know, you get a coin set worth $1.2 million. Now, how do you sell that? Number one, so that asset just sits there almost dead for like a long time. And secondly, there are a lot of people that, you know, are major coin collectors, you know, they're die to own a portion of that coin set. If the whole thing, if they could afford it, but they can't, you know, they might be sitting with 20,000 Rand and they would like to invest in it. So we're fractionalizing a coin set, using NFTs. And you can buy, some NFTs, which gives you equity in the coin set. So the coin set is held in a safe. That's Scoin's business model. And we just allow people to pretty much trade in equity of that coin set. So, you know, that's just not possible for, which is really cool. We've got carbon offsetting. So this one is a little bit less, in terms of making money and more just to allow everyday people to, offset their carbon. So, you know, everyone knows about carbon credits and how businesses can buy carbon credits. And that's, you know, generally done at high volumes. So what we've done is distill it down into buying carbon credits or offsetting your carbon, and allowing people to understand it. So the NFTs that we are selling are to do with your daily life. So, you know, maybe you drink bottles of water, right? And you feel a bit guilty because, you know, the production of that bottle of water is, you know, damaging to the environment. So we had a company look at the statistics behind it, and you can buy an NFT that offsets the carbon for some of your daily activities, eating meat. So, you know, that will be launching in the next 3 weeks. So if you're feeling guilty about the things that you do in your daily life, you can just buy these NFTs and offset your carbon, you know, footprint, which is pretty cool. So that's like one that's just not as financial, but really awesome. We did a drop with Honest Chocolate, so more of like a promotional campaign. So Honest Chocolate's a local chocolate brand, and they wanted to give a 1 year discount for all their chocolate. They've got 5 branches across South Africa. And, you know, some people are avid fans of the brand and, you know, want to get close into the brand and buy a lot of their chocolate and support the business. So, you know, they can buy a NFT that is done by a local artist. And that's the artist is actually the wrapper around the chocolate. They produce the artwork for that. So you're buying the artwork. You're also buying into the brand and getting a discount for them long term. So that's just like another application there. And then we're also looking at tokenizing, you know, equity of businesses. So there's another company called Tented Adventures. They've really struggled with funding their business through traditional mediums, and they want to tokenize their equity in their business. So one token equals 10% of their company, and just to list those tokens and sell those tokens so they can raise funds more easily. So there's just, you know, infinite examples of what you can do. And then the last one I just want to mention that's really, really crazy is we're looking at tokenizing and making YouTube channels, the revenue streams of the YouTube channels into a dividend. So for example, let's just say you have a creator, right? And you're extremely excited about this creator and you want to invest in that creator, but there's actually no way of doing that. They can take a YouTube video of theirs and create a whole bunch of NFTs that represent the revenue of that YouTube video or a channel. So you can buy into a specific video or buy into that channel. And by buying that NFT, it sits in your wallet. And every 3 months, the creator will pay a smart contract from all the revenues of that channel or the video into that smart contract. And your NFT will, that NFT that's sitting in the wallet will tell the smart contract where to pay the money. So essentially what that means is you can invest into a creator's video channel, and every 3 months you get a payout based on the revenue that that video or the channel makes, which is really, really awesome. Like that kind of use case, you never could do with traditional financial systems. And it allows for creators to get money up front. You know, a lot of YouTubers, they don't need money in 5 years' time when they're successful. They need money now, and they need people to buy into their success. So the fans that believe in them can buy into their tokens. Give them cash up front to invest in their channel. They don't need the revenue of that video in 5 years' time. They need it now. And then also it creates evangelists for your brand. So the people buying into that YouTube video or channel now would really want to share it because they have an incentive. They get money back for supporting you. So then they share it like crazy, and then your channel grows. So that's just a couple of use cases.
That's a lot of use cases, you know, and a couple that I wouldn't have even thought about. And I think it sort of lends itself to, at the height of the NFT craze, people were making memes about how you could literally make an NFT about literally anything, under the sun. And, you know, some of the use cases that you just gave, I think they speak to, you know, how varied the applications can actually be. I want to drill down on fungibility for a moment, right? Because I think for the critics of NFTs, that's where one of the big debates, you know, is to say, okay, fine, if I'm buying ownership in a piece of art, for example, let's say an image, especially a digital image, you know, people can literally go control, copy, paste, digital images. Where is the actual non-fungibility, coming from when it comes from that? And I'm hoping maybe you could help us to explain that little piece using the YouTube example, because at least YouTube videos are something that I personally understand, and you've already given us a walkthrough, how that works. You invest in the NFT, and then every 3 months revenue generated from a video online, gets paid into the NFT, and then that then gets dispersed to the people that would have invested in a particular video and all of that stuff. So fungibility, let's use that YouTube example to explain, that actual, fungibility. Is it really non-fungible, or are people at a stage where they're just crowdfunding but deciding that they're going to use NFTs because that's what's trendy right now? I think that's the core question I'm asking.
So it depends. I mean, I think so a lot of the times when you're talking about these NFT projects, what they do is they create a generative collection of like 1,000 items. Now each one is a different image, slightly different, which gives it that, non-fungibility, which is not the same. So, even though potentially the token represents equity in something, or, a revenue, access to a revenue stream, or like options to buy into something else, the reason it's a non-fungible token is because the actual art is different, slightly different, which, I feel today this, I like the question you ask, because I think it's kind of, it's just a bit of like it's a small nuance that people don't realize. And a lot of the times these projects aren't really fungible. If you look at Bored Ape Yacht Clubs, like some apes are different to others, but the reality is it's like, they're kind of the same thing. You're buying into a project, whether the art's different or not, it's kind of representing, each NFT is representing a very similar thing. Mutant apes are different from normal apes, but each ape, even though some are worth more and less, they're kind of the same. So I think like how we like to see it at the moment is that what NFTs do is it allows any website to pick up a piece of data essentially and tell you who owns it, right? So whether that means it's like truly an NFT or not, the actual standard, the ERC 721 standard, I know that sounds all complicated and things, but that's what the NFT standard is. That allows any website to look at a token. So whether you want to call it an NFT or not, or call it an ERC-721 token, it allows you to look at that thing and say, what is this? Like, what does it do? And what NFTs are really good at, or ERC-721 tokens, is that they show you more data than generally a cryptocurrency token would. So cryptocurrency tokens are ERC-20 tokens, right? But they don't link to other data. When you import a cryptocurrency into a website, like a lot of these exchanges have cryptocurrencies on their site, you don't see any other data. You just see the coin name. Does that tell you anything? Does that give you any information about what you're buying? Generally, you know what they are before buying it. Like, you know, a lot of people in the crypto scene know USDC because it's been around for a long time. But when you look at it at a website, you don't see on an exchange what USDC is. You just see the currency USDC, which is a problem when you want to talk about projects, right? When I want to invest in something, I want to know the website. I want an image to give me a visual of what I'm investing in. I want to know, a whole bunch of other data that NFTs generally have. Right. And that's really cool. So whether it's truly non-fungible or not, I think this token standard that's come about, the ERC-721, which is commonly known as NFTs, is actually a little bit more powerful than just the NFT itself. It's a way that any website can look at a token that can do powerful things, that can be pay out people on a quarterly basis, or, give you access to certain other technologies or Discord channels or something like that. That's where the power is. And whether it's non-fungible, fungible, I don't think it really matters. It depends on the use case and what you're trying to do. I hope that kind of answers the question.
No, it really does, because I think one of the key ones is, at least you haven't tried to make it seem as if everything is, non-fungible. Just recognizing the fact that there is a lot of gray area, I think, it's very important, because at least people will know that if they're dealing with Adam, he's not trying to sell them a dream, that all of this stuff is truly non-fungible. So it's quite an interesting discussion, to have at the moment. And I guess the use cases that people are coming up with when it comes to, tokens and what people, choose to turn into a token. What are some of the trends that you are seeing? Earlier on, you gave us like a whole bunch of different use cases. But rather than looking at the different use cases, what's popular at the moment? I think by now we understand the art piece, because that's what a lot of marketing and a lot of discussion around NFTs has actually been about, especially in the mainstream. But from what you're seeing, like, what are some of the big use cases? I think earlier on you spoke about the solar project. I'm holding on to that, because I can see that is a tool that people might jump onto, especially if you are a person who's running a big business, or you are someone who's trying to fund your big projects and that type of thing. What are you seeing on the ground?
So look, I think we'll start with the traditional ones. I mean, art is still thriving, not the speculative stuff, like the actual artists that normally sell art and the digital artists that are really, really talented and have built a brand around them. I think that's just, still thriving and doing really well. Gaming is a huge one. I think gaming was just designed, or like NFTs just were doing what games were like, allowed games to do what they've always wanted to do, which is allowing like the aftermarket sales of items in games just be better. Like Steam and these other providers generally close down on an ecosystem. And then as a gamer, you pour a lot of money into a system or like a game, and then basically you can't get it out, which sucks. So you're done playing a game. Now you've bought hundreds of items in the game and you want to get it out. NFTs are a way that you can sell it to the market, and then you can go play another game. And other people in the original game that you're playing are super excited because they got a good deal on all the items you sold them. So I think gaming is just like a great one. And then the second part of gaming is play to earn, which is more to do with like creating an in-game economy using cryptocurrencies and NFTs to fund and provide like almost like an economic system. So you join the game, you play, and you actually earn money, which is such a weird concept. It's like, how the hell is that even possible, right? so like, it's, look, a lot of the what's happening in the play to earn space is these economies are collapsing and they're not really like thought through too well. But I think the newer ones are are pretty crazy, and they actually allow people to make money while gaming, which I, yeah, it's just look into it. It's too complicated probably to dive into now, but yeah, play to earn is huge. I'd say promotional campaigns are really big. I think a lot of brands are really trying to tap into creating NFTs to allow, you know, for different ways for people to interact with their brand. So for example, like Honest Chocolate giving a discount, 10% discount for a year or potentially a lifetime is pretty cool. You know, there's very few ways that you can actually use apps or systems to give people, you know, like different types of rewards for being loyal to your brand. That's pretty big. Property is going to be a huge one. We haven't really seen many triggers being pulled. We're looking at it closely and you know, looking at the right project to launch. But you can either fractionalize property and allow, you know, a lot of people to buy into a specific property. You know, you get a lot of funds that group properties together, and then you're buying into a whole bunch of properties along with thousands of other people. But that kind of sucks, because it's like, okay, I know that building right next to where I live is like a great investment. If I can invest in that specific building, I know that's a good investment. So, you know, allowing people to, you know, fractionalize their property and sell off pieces is pretty cool, as well as also actually changing the way the title deeds work and property transfers. So I think that one's going to be, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to roll out in SA in terms of, you know, how the government's going to feel about it and things like that. But essentially the goal is to get it to, you walk to a property, you see the NFT, you look at the property, you say, I want to buy this, and you just buy it. You know, the NFT gets transferred into your wallet, and it's all amazing. That's the future. So I think the early stages of that are playing out now. People are looking at legal structures and how to actually put a property into a business structure. And then from there, the NFT is a representation of kind of like you can stay there or live there. You know, there's probably like 100 different ways you can get around it legally, but you know, they all have downsides towards businesses at the moment. So properties are a huge one. And I think when the time is right, as well as the kind of the right parties come together, it's gonna change the game for property, which is awesome. And then yeah, I think like asset-backed NFTs is starting to pick up. I'd say a lot of people are gonna look at you know, just selling everyday things and you know, commodities, and you know, it's just gonna open up the, it just allows you to trade physical items, specifically when they're held in escrow, a lot better. So I think that's another one.
You know, the property example that you're giving, once again, we're coming back to the smart contract. I think that one, I'm not an expert myself, but I think that one has a lot of utility and probably has like a lot of legs. What I do see or anticipate is a situation where, let's say you have a building. I'm thinking about... You're in Cape Town at the moment, right? So I'm thinking about, let's say a building like the one that has the Silo Hotel in it, right? Let's say that building is worth 10 million rand or something, right? And then they have a QR, who knows? We're now living in that world where outside of the Silo building, there's a QR code, you know, that leads to your ability to buy an NFT in this building. Now, because NFTs are non-fungible, all right, it means that you are taking up a fixed piece of the building. Now, going forward, one of the big questions that I'm waiting for, you know, some answers in is, by creating NFTs in a building, do you create a set number of NFTs in a building, for example, or do you allow it to become a free-flowing market? Because the moment it becomes a free-flowing market, then it means, you know, if Mudiwa and Adam put 5 million rand into the NFT for the Silo building, then in essence, Mudiwa and Adam, you know, own 50% each of the building because they have 5 million, 5 million. Great. If Sue and Thomas then come in and throw another 5 million each into the building, what that in essence, in a free market, it would mean that your building has doubled and is now worth 20 million, and that our 50% shares have now been diluted to, 25%, each. And, you know, that's what we own. And so it's all of those questions that I'm now thinking about to say, like, you know, do you have an infinite number of owners, let's say, in a building, if you create an NFT for it? Because, you know, things like that, you know, then create this ballooning effect if something is popular. You know, you have a building that begins at 10 million rand on the market. But with NFTs, if there's an infinite number and more people, you know, invest in this NFT, then it drives up the price of the building. Who knows? In 5 years' time, that same building might now be worth 100 million rand because so many people have now invested in it. And what's interesting is that it's not that value is no longer a speculative amount, but rather an amount owing to the amount of money that people have actually put into the building, as opposed to some perceived market price for the building. So, yeah, it's I don't know.
I think it's how you skin the cat, right? I mean, like, there's, so let's take like a let's take a apartment block, for example. Like, there's one way you could do it. You could say, for every square meter in the building, we're creating an NFT, and each one is unique, and you own that specific square in the building, and it entitles you to the revenue. You could make that a normal cryptocurrency token called, let's just say, I used to live in a building in Woodstock called the WEX token, right? And you could make it into a cryptocurrency token, an ERC-20 token rather, and then let people buy into that. And trade on that. So that'll get rid of the problem of, how many people wanting to buy in and stuff like that. So you could have as many tokens as you want. They don't have to be two. But, you know, sometimes you'd want to just make an apartment block an NFT. So, you know, apartment 705 is an NFT. When you buy that, you now are allowed to stay in that apartment block. You know, it's yours. You can do with it what you like. So I think it depends on how you'd want it structured. And I think this is the conversation that's not really been had, because, like you said, there's this weird thing about NFTs and, like, are they really NFTs? So I think what you got to think about it this way is that smart contracts never really had a strong use case before NFTs, because people, number one, didn't understand it. And number two, there was no standardized smart contracts out there that really, like, pushed the needle. There was for, like, DeFi and some other stuff, but, you know, NFTs has brought it into the mainstream. And I think, like, if you use that as a foundation, let's just say you want to, fractionalize a building. Now, what do you do? Do you use cryptocurrency like tokens, or do you use NFT tokens? You know, it's up to you to decide. So I think, the general conversation isn't around necessarily about NFTs, but actually about blockchain now. How does blockchain actually solve these problems? And whether you're talking about NFTs or cryptocurrency tokens or these things, that's up for each use case to decide which one is best. And I think what NFTs has just done is let people wrap their head around, oh, wow, like, I can actually own stuff, you know, on this thing called the blockchain that now, like, you know, no central entity really owns, and it feels like very awesome. And the process is quick and cheap. You know, I can, you know, if you look at a property transfer, what is it, like 70,000 Rand for transfer fees sometimes. I've gone through the process recently. It's like, I think I paid like 70,000-100,000 Rand in transfer fees, plus all these other additional fees and things that you have to do. And it's annoying. Or I could have just transferred a property, if an NFT would have cost me, you know, like $1 for the transfer fees on the blockchain. So the speed increase, it's like, you know, everyone knows the benefits of what the blockchain brings. But I think the conversation, what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks to months to years, is how, you know, people understand the blockchain, which tokens are used for right reasons, and also hiding that complexity to some degree. You know, that's what Moment's trying to do. When you want to fractionalize a building, come to us. We'll talk to you how the right way to do it is. We've got a compliance team. We'll look at, like, what the right legal structure is. What you're trying to achieve, and then match the technology there. And now all that NFTs has actually done is just allowing the public to go, oh, I actually understand these things now. I'm ready to buy into it. Previously, if you had said, like, 2 years ago, hey, I want to create these things called NFTs, which someone would have been like, I don't even know what you're talking about, and I can sell and fractionalize a property, they're going to be like, dude, like, what are you talking about? Like, you're like on another planet, you know? And funny enough, I think, Cyril Ramaphosa's son chatted to our investor, Rob Hirsov, like 5 to 10 years ago or some crazy long time ago about NFTs. And Rob was like, what the hell is this? You know, so before it's when NFTs weren't a thing, people couldn't buy into the use cases that blockchain has actually provided. Now, actually, NFTs has just opened up, oh, smart contracts are useful. And now let's standardize more. Let's look at a property standard in South Africa for NFTs. That would be awesome. You know, if let's all agree on one, it doesn't have to be like, this is the NFT standard. We can actually build on the standards. You've got the normal, you know, NFT kind of functionality, which is it's an asset. You can send it, you can buy it, you can do whatever you want with it. It's yours, right? Now let's tack on some extra things that enable it to be better for property in South Africa and add some more functionality. Now let's call it a PNFT. So a property NFT, and let's standardize more so we can collaborate on the internet more effectively, and, you know, speed up transactions, make life easier. You know, buying a property is a 3-month process. It shouldn't be. Now, I'm not saying we're going to get there day one, but yeah, NFTs is just the beginning.
Yeah, no, it would be very interesting to see how, you know, all of those how all of those discussions evolve over time, and particularly, like you said, the choices that people make, you know, because they, when it comes to blockchain, there's so many different options that people can take, just around how, they decide to make use of, you know, these smart contracts of blockchain technology, when it comes to, you know, ownership, when it comes to defining, you know, what ownership is, you know, is it infinite ownership? Is it finite? Is it unique? You know, all of these different questions. So as we're ending off the discussion, Adam, just want to come back to the business's moment very quickly. You spoke just now about the team that you have a compliance department, and the fact that you guys are doing all of this advisory work about how people can go about tokenizing, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, perhaps some of the best ways to launch certain things, you know, how to mint an NFT, you know, all of that. What does your team look like at the moment, and you know, how big is your presence?
Sweet. So yeah, we've got about 6 to 7 developers in our team. We've got 2 people in compliance. We've got some business to business account managers that help businesses, you know, understand the use case that they're wanting to launch with us. Get on board. We've got a whole creative team, which helps, like, you know, launching an NFT project requires a lot of, you know, work in terms of telling people about it, propositioning it in the right way, getting people to understand what you're trying to do. So we've got probably one of the most talented creative teams that, you know, creates videos and helps the businesses that we're working with, show their project to the world in a way that everyday consumers can understand and not make it complex. You know, like, you know, you're buying an NFT, but in this project, what does it actually mean for you? How does it work? Let's simplify it down so that people can understand it. So we've got an all-rounded team to actually launch NFT projects. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to launch some of the, we're trying to launch the biggest projects in Africa. And that solves problems. So, you know, if any businesses wants to use, if they want to use NFTs, or thinking about it, or just want to use smart contracts, but more specifically in NFTs, that want to chat to us, yeah, we would love to kind of work with businesses, in Africa that are, you know, wanting to get into the space, but don't really know how. They've got really good use cases, but, you know, it's a complex process. And, yeah, we're, you know, we're now 40 to 50,000 users strong, on our platform. And yeah, we're launching 4 projects this month that are larger scale projects, fractionalizing things up to $1.2 million. So yeah, we're I think the next steps now is just working with African partners to launch some of the biggest NFT projects, and show that, number one, that they're not always rug pulls. you know, not every Web3 or NFT project is going to take your money and run, specifically when you're working with good brands. That's what we're going to try to prove. And then we want to prove that specifically in Africa, where some of the use cases are actually stronger, where, you know, lots of people are unbanked and you know, how NFTs and crypto can help. We want to actually let those use cases shine, and yeah, work with the right partners.
At the moment, you said 40 to 50,000 users over what period?
Our user base has grown over a year. So we've only a year old, and yeah, we're sitting on, I just... The number grows really fast, so I find it. But yeah, let's just go safe and say 45,000. It's just, I know it's in the 40,000 mark, but it could be 50 right now. So
okay, yeah, so this is over the year.
Yeah, yeah. So we're growing pretty fast. You know, just to speak to some of the African adoption numbers. I mean, it's like crypto payments have grown by 1,200% in Africa. You know, in the very short period of time. So like the growth rate in Africa is insanely fast for crypto. I mean, 70% of the population is under the age of 30. So it's like all the right, you know, it's like early adopters, young people that are waking up to new technology are really dying to use it. So yeah.
All right. And then on a last point for us on the business itself, because you guys are a startup, you mentioned just now the fact that, one of your investors, what has your funding journey looked like? How are you guys actually funding the business? Are you guys raising capital? Like, where are you guys? Series A, B, C, D, E, F, G, where are you guys at the moment?
Sweet. So we're in a, we're just before a Series A. So we raised a seed round, and we were going to raise a Series A, but in the current market, we decided that we just want to, kind of keep going at a very low burn rate. We believe in the technology for 10 years. So we're not trying to gain as much capital, you know, take a lot of, chunk a lot of equity out of our company, to grow something that isn't there yet. This market isn't just like there, you know. So we're launching projects. We're going to be launching projects in the next 2 years. So we don't need infinite capital to do that. So we're raising $2 million on a safe note to bridge us to Series A when we feel the right time is. And yeah, the funding has actually been pretty awesome to date. When we started the journey, we met Rob Herzog, had a handshake deal in like one night. So we, it took one day to convince him to give us a little bit of capital to start. Got a seed raise for $300,000 2 weeks later after the MVP was built. So that was pretty fast from an overseas investor, the Friedkin Group. And then, yeah, ever since then, we just bridged a little bit more cash with a safe note, which brought us to a total of $650,000 to date. Now we're raising an additional $2 million. We're going to build a really strong, long-term company, and we're extremely excited, about the future. So yeah, if people are looking to invest, you can invest through Simple Capital or chat to us directly. Aaron, the other co-founder, the CEO, he's heading to the US at the moment. We won a challenge called the XTC challenge, the Extreme Tech Challenge. And he's going to be pitching to a whole bunch of US investors. And maybe just speaking about the landscape, I think in South Africa, it's a little, people struggle to buy into the Web3 and NFT space here. I think it's quite like a long-term vision, and it is really going to change the internet. But a lot of SA investors, I don't think, not all, I don't want to say like it's completely like that, but a lot of SA and African investors are a little bit hesitant around blockchain, and only some funds are popping up here and there. So I think it'll be a lot easier right now. But that's why we're heading to America to raise capital abroad, because it's, people buy into the vision a lot more easily. They understand NFTs and Web3 a lot better than I would say locally.
No, most certainly. And, we wish you the best on the funding journey, raising capital and the like. I'm sure one of these days I'd be interested to bring you back on. Maybe we can have a discussion around how NFTs could possibly disrupt the world of venture capital and how businesses actually, fund themselves. Definitely keen to have that discussion in future. So that's been us. We were talking to Adam Romaine, who is the co-founder over at Moment. They are a social NFT marketplace. Very fascinating discussion. I'm sure someone was listening to this. We did go quite into the weeds on a number of different issues, pertaining to ownership, pertaining to fungibility, whether or not this is a market that has really fallen off. But Adam is adamant that we do find ourselves in a situation where people are finding more and more use cases around NFTs. Some of the more interesting ones that we're talking about, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, ownership when it comes to properties, smart contracts and the like. But the one that was most intriguing to me is how people are tokenizing the world of carbon credits. You know, I would not have even thought about, you know, something like that. But I guess that is the creativity that people are bringing to the market. He does say that the world of art, you know, for those artists that have built their loyal fan bases, you know, continues to be, you know, a very big driver in the market. And then he also, you know, then speaks about the fact that people are using it as a tool to fund, you know, some of the larger projects. We spent quite a bit of time talking about a solo project earlier on that was fascinating. And I do think, that's what sparked that thought about how NFTs could disrupt the world of, you know, venture capital and the like. Because when you're talking about project finance, those are usually huge projects. You're talking corporate finance, etc. And if that, you know, can be incorporated with smart contracts, who knows what type of conversations we will be having in future. So that's been it. You know, very fascinating discussion, as I said. Adam, thank you so much for, you know, taking time for discussing with us and, you know, just sharing your insights.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. And I would love to come back and keep having the conversation as the industry grows.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Once again, a fascinating discussion around the blockchain, but more specifically NFTs or non-fungible tokens. And I think going forward, that is literally going to be the biggest discussion that people are going to need to have around NFTs, this issue of fungibility. That F in NFTs is where I think, you know, the wheels are either going to come on or completely fall off, right? Because at the moment, it really does seem like a lot of people are jumping onto NFTs, not necessarily because they truly understand what's going on and they sort of get the concept of fungibility, but rather this is where the money is. This is what's cool at the moment. This is what's trending. And there's people that are willing to get into that. But that element of fungibility doesn't seem to really be there in a lot of the use cases that people are talking about. Right. So if we can bed down, you know, that piece of the debate, I think it really would be great. And over time, it will be interesting to see how the market develops. One of the things that I like about what Adam was talking about is to say that we seem to be getting to a stage where, you know, the hype is dying down. I think it's always great when in an exciting market, the hype does die down, because at least when it dies down, you have the time to actually look at the landscape and see what are people doing. Is there actual value in this thing called NFTs? What are people actually doing out there? So when you have things like that happening, then I think it opens us up to see what's real, what's not real, and how can people actually improve, right? There was a lot of hype around NFTs. A lot of that hype has actually died down. Now we can get into the serious discussions about how people are using them for property, how people are using them for corporate finance as well as project finance. As I said, I think NFTs, just given their nature, their alignment to blockchain and technology, we could see an application for how people, you know, fund their ventures in future. How does venture capital get affected by your NFTs? Because I think it can really help to maybe revolutionize a little bit the crowdfunding market. Because when you think about crowdfunding, right, and actually making sure that you are supporting businesses or raising funds, etc., NFTs might actually come to the fore as an interesting tool and channel through which people are able to do that. But we will be waiting to see. As I said, I'm not an expert, just, you know, curious mind around this space, and once again, curious to see how it will evolve over time. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.